Greetings, a-holes.
Contrarian
a-holes.
Are you talking to the Steelers, or are you talking to our listening base?
I'm talking to the Steelers. I'm talking to the Packers.
Yes, this is
definitely.
This is an angst-ridden, a-hole-rich podcast today.
Yes, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. We are coming to you today from a bunker deep inside the Old White Man Cabal compound here on Super Sunday. And I know it's disappointment all around as far as we're concerned. So who are you rooting for today?
I mean, I got to go with the Packers, but I know that that's like poison in your mouth. But, yeah. I mean, it's like – first two reasons why. Several reasons. But, you know, first of all, I mean, Steelers fans are insufferable, are they not?
They are insufferable.
They are insufferable. I mean, so I just don't know if I can take any of that. Any more of that crap. And, you know, number two is Roethlisberger is just a premium douchebag, you know, and it's just hard. And I'm just having a hard time. I know some people would say the same thing about Brady, and obviously I'm a Patriots guy, but that's a tough pill to swallow if Roethlisberger gets three rings.
Yeah, it really, it, you know, this is like an impossible Super Bowl. It's like choosing between Hitler and Stalin.
I mean, and so I don't have the venom towards the Packers as you do, but as a Bears fan, it's ingrained into your DNA to, you know, to hate them.
I mean, it's not that I support the Steelers. It's that I have to go for the defeat of the Packers. I mean, it's encoded in my DNA.
I understand that completely. Like last year was pretty easy. You wanted this, you know, Saints, go Saints. You know, as a Pats guy, it's like, yeah, you don't want the Colts doing anything. So, but
I'm actually keeping my fingers crossed for like a cataclysmic meteor strike during the game.
Well, with all the ice falling everywhere, you never know what's going to happen. Dallas has suddenly turned into Siberia all of a sudden. So, yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, I have to go with the Packers. And it's like especially upsetting because, you know, hey, the Patriots beat both of these teams. They destroyed the Steelers, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things with great. Just yet another reminder of just the gag job and knife twist that went down in Gillette Stadium several weeks back. So
yeah,
any Brady's MVP award doesn't do anything to, you know, to calm those storms. So yeah, it's a lose-lose proposition, is it not?
It is. It really is. So you know, it's just going to be about eating, having a couple beers, and
I mean, because you can't feel good. I mean, if you see Roethlisberger hoist up that trophy, yes, there's a schadenfreude that you feel pretty good about the Packers losing, but do you feel good as a human being to see Ben Roethlisberger host another Super Bowl trophy, you know?
No. I mean, my comment on Facebook was that I have to go for the Steelers because the enemy of my enemy is my motorcycle crashing misogynist douchebag friend.
Yes.
I mean, that's what I'm stuck with. I mean,
it is
awful.
So, yeah, but yeah, so we'll see. I mean, are there any more insufferable fans in football than Steelers fans? And I think that's inherited from the 70s and the Steel Curtain garbage and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, Cowboys fans might.
Yeah, that's true.
There, but
yeah, whenever you have America's team, that's pretty. It's like, that doesn't seem fair to the rest of the teams, you know?
No, not at all. So this is Objection.
And, yeah.
Yes. You're worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery.
Extra dope a-hole.
Huh?
Extra doses a-holds today, though.
Yeah. Brought to you by DVD Verdict with a generous grant from the Old White Man Cabal also. And for our regular listeners, if you think that, you know, over the past few months or so with the various fawning lists that we've done and countdowns and stuff, if you've been thinking that we're getting a little soft, I think that this episode will kind of bring things back in terms of just off the charts a-holery.
We're going to make a lot of enemies, I think, this episode.
Right. I mean, we're going out of our way on this special Super Bowl edition of the show to just trash a beloved classic. Wouldn't you say?
I think so. I mean, we got the football theme going. We got the fact that we're both miserable, bitter bastards right now going. So we decided to direct all of our rancor towards something that's so beloved, especially by uh, by men as well. So this is we're not like this isn't like a layup here. We're picking on something that's universally beloved almost in the male community. So much so that I remember a coworker of mine saying her husband tears up just when he hears the music to this movie.
Oh, that's sad.
That is so. This is sacred ground here.
Yeah, and we're going to tromp all over it and pretty much lay a deuce on it.
Yes.
I think. But before we get to that, have you ever, while we're on the subject of football,
yeah,
do you watch or have you ever watched Friday Night Lights, the TV show?
Not the TV show. I enjoyed the film. I actually enjoyed the movie. I thought that was pretty good. I hear great things about the TV show, but I have not seen it.
Yeah, my wife and I have gotten addicted to it over the past maybe a month or so. We've been streaming it, so we're like at the maybe a third of the way through the third season. And just bringing it up because it fits squarely into one of the things that we talk about on the show a lot, which is the Hollywood's tendency to posit that men are stupid. The only thing stupider than a man is a husband, and the only thing stupider than a husband is a father.
That's right.
And what's interesting about Friday Night Lights as a show is that really, you know, it is about football sort of on the surface, but what it's really about is kind of manhood and fatherhood, and all of the characters on a regular basis sort of are presented with the opportunity on field and off field to behave with grace under pressure. And, you know, the extent to which they succeed kind of defines them as men. And the other amazing thing about the show is pretty much everybody is driven. Most of the characters are driven in one way or another by their relationships with their fathers, either, you know, good father, bad father, absentee father, and not in a kind of pat way. But, you know, the characters who really struggle on the show tend to be ones that, you know, either their father's a scumbag or is overbearing or is just not there and that sort of stuff. So, you know, I was amazed that a show like this would exist in this day and age.
And barely existing, right? It's jumped, like, it's been on DirecTV. It's been all over the place, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. You know.
So. Isn't it wrapping up for, isn't the series finale airing on NBC at some point or something like that?
I think so. I definitely know this current season is the last season, and I haven't watched any of that. We're sort of watching it in order, and we'll, I don't know, get that when it comes out on DVD or whatever, stream it. But
oh yeah, you're another in a long line of people who have sung the praises of the show. So
yeah, definitely to be checked out. I'm again amazed that, you know, it presents an image of men who can, you know, not come close to killing themselves with basic tasks.
And,
you know,
that's right.
They're not a bunch of mouth breathers.
And, right.
You know, especially in a show about football, you sort of expect that, you know, kind of the Hollywood take on a bunch of Texas high school football players would be, these are mouth breathing morons. None of the characters are treated like that way at all.
Well, the old white men cabal, they're powerful. Sometimes they're able to get shows made.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. Now it does, you know, I mean, it does not shy away from the fact that people in small towns in Texas, when it comes to high school football, are completely insane.
Oh, that is the rumor.
Yeah, I mean, that's just fact. So there's no point in soft selling that one.
I mean, there's got to be a connection there because isn't the same like in Western PA? Isn't there a similar, like, it is just insanity? So maybe that's what breeds like your Dallas Cowboy douche fans and your Steeler douche fans, you know.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's what's possible. So,
yeah, it's a weird thing. As someone who lives in the Southeast but wasn't born or raised here, it's a bizarre phenomenon. Like, nobody really cares about the NFL down here.
Really? And you're in the Atlanta area, right?
Yeah, it is all, you know, Georgia college football.
Really? So the Falcons, even when they have a good year, they don't really register on the
Yeah, people are, you know, I mean, they'll get excited about the Falcons if they have a good year. But if they have a bad year, nobody cares. I mean, there's no team loyalty whatsoever. There's not even really team loyalty for the Braves. You know, they're, as much as they've been a great team over the years, the city's interest in them is entirely dictated by how successful they are.
And I know the Hawks are about as captivating a franchise for Atlanta as, like, Pop Warner song or something.
I don't think most Atlantans even know that they have a basketball team.
Or professional hockey team, for that matter.
Right, right. but, you know, Georgia football is like a big deal.
Interesting. So, okay.
Yeah. Everybody loves it, except for me. Anyway, getting on to our confrontational, complete a-holery.
No excuse for this episode.
No excuse. But, you know, we will say what we believe to be the truth.
And I would say that this film has got to be – I would put it in the top three as far as pop culture goes, as far the top three sports movies that bring grown men to tears. There's three movies I think of consistently, and this is in one of those. And I think they're all pretty much interchangeable. The other two I'll just give you right now is Hoosiers and Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
I've always thought
I would also put in there probably Brian's song.
Okay, missed that one.
Which is old school. But, you know, Gale Sayers and everything and the dude dying and, you know.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But, yeah, the movie that we are talking about rated very highly on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got an 80% from critics and an 88% from audience members is 1994's Rudy.
Yes.
Starring Samwise Gamgee himself. Sean Astin.
That's right. As he really worked to shake being typecast from Toy. It was Toy Soldiers before or after Rudy? I wonder. You remember that movie, Toy Soldiers?
Yeah.
The Die Hard knockoff in a private school for boys starring Sean Astin and some other kids who just hung around in their underwear for some reason.
Yeah, that's a disturbing movie.
Yes, Lou Gossett Jr. is in this. I'm not sure if this is pre or post. It's got to be post. But he's probably Sean Astin anyway, working real hard to shake, you know, the Mikey stereotype from Goonies. So, goes for something totally different.
And, well, we've got some reviews here.
Yeah, it's,
so
yeah.
I'm doing the Toy Soldier lookup.
Oh, good.
It's gonna bug me. Oh, when was that made? Let's see. 1991, so it was 3 years after.
Okay.
It was after Toy Soldiers. I'm going to start in looking at the fawning reviews over this.
Yeah.
And a lot of them aren't fawning. A lot of them are sort of like, it's manipulative, but, you know, it works. I can't help but be manipulated by it. But one Audrey Rock Richardson from the, I don't know where that is, Tool Transcript Bulletin in Utah. Says it is perhaps the greatest sports movie in film history.
Now, interesting again, not to play the gender card so much as we often do, but from a woman.
Right.
I wonder. I still hold that Rudy appeals maybe more to the male, you know, to a male viewer, perhaps. You know, there's maybe more to connect with, but that's interesting to hear from a female perspective.
Yeah, greatest sports movie ever. I don't know about
that.
You know, there's a few of them like the shamelessly manipulative, but who cares when it's so damn uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of them. A lot of the same, you know, it looks like they've been reading each other's reviews. Terrific but manipulative drama about the power of following one's dreams. And the one that really made me laugh, which was for the recent Blu-ray release a couple years ago, was with its faithful rendering of a true inspirational story, Rudy earns its sentiment. An irresistible inspiration for inspirational movie for all ages.
Now I know you have issue with an adjective in that line.
Yes.
Sure, yes.
Yes, which is the faithful
part of it. Which you actually alerted me to and I didn't realize. So we'll be getting to that pretty soon.
Yeah, so what is your summation, I guess?
Well, I reviewed the Blu-ray. I've seen the movie twice. I rented it once a while ago, like everyone else did, watched it. Up front, I'm more of a Hoosiers guy when it comes to that lineup, you know. I love Hoosiers. That, again, is loosely based on true events. But, there's formula in it, but it's just like Gene Hackman is just so awesome in that movie. And Dennis Hopper, I think he won an Academy Award, right?
I believe he did.
So, I mean, it's just such a quality movie. And, you know, I just tend to like maybe it's me liking basketball more, but that's always been at the top of my list. And as weird and goofy as Field of Dreams is, the whole can I play catch with your dad type of thing. You know, I'm always a sucker for that kind of stuff. So that's kind of good. So you know, loving those two movies, I'd rented Rudy, knew when I was behind the curve, and I liked it. It didn't quite resonate for me. So when I was able to watch it again the second time for the Blu-ray review for DVD Verdict, you know, I was kind of okay, let's really see what's going on here. And I just kind of left again like, ho-hum. And one of the big things that stood out to me watching the second time was there's no way around it. Rudy is a feature-length advertisement for Notre Dame.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely. And it's not
a recruiting film.
And it's a recruiting film. You're getting these big shots of the campus. You're getting all the syrupy music. And then the characters, all they talk about is how awesome Notre Dame is and how badly they want to go there. You know, I didn't notice Charlie Weiss being mentioned at all in the credits or anything. So, you know, things have changed a lot, I'm sure, in the football program since then. But it's just one of those. It's like the lost city of Atlantis. You know, that's just the way. It's so overwrought, just kind of this reverence to Notre Dame. Look, it's a great school. I've got friends who've gone there, and they've liked their education. But the way it is just set up in Rudy, I mean, it's like, you know, somewhere in the Dean's Hall, Jesus sits on the right hand of God the Father somewhere. That's how the Notre Dame is set up. So that, like, immediately jumped on. That grew tiring very quickly.
Yeah, and it's poorly handled because of the fact that the movie itself is not objective about the fawning over Notre Dame at all. Like,
right.
You could understand, okay, Rudy and his family, and just catching up people who maybe haven't seen it, the movie is about this kid, Daniel Rudiger was his name. He went to Notre Dame in the mid-70s, dreamed of playing on the football team. The problem was he was about 5'5 and 160-some-odd pounds. And so I think he made it on to, like, their
practice squad.
But, you know, in his final game was allowed to play two downs.
Yes.
And that's the big glorious moment at the
yes.
end.
Yes, and he gets a stat.
You know, that's fine that his family is just gaga over Notre Dame, and that certainly exists for schools all over the country and definitely for Notre Dame. But the movie itself, like, the omnipotent voice of the movie accepts that fawning. Like, it's not critical, it's not neutral about it. It's like, it totally buys into the idea that Notre Dame is heaven on earth.
I mean, every shot in that movie, like when he walks into the stadium and looks around and it slowly pans around. I mean, it's like Russell Crowe walking into the stadium in Gladiator, you know? It's just got this, I mean, they're just filmed with this, it's not, you know, it's not subtle at all. It's just filmed with this aura that you, Earthling, are being given a look at something here that no human eyes have ever seen.
Right.
You know, it's like Indiana Jones walking into the Knight's Cave to choose a, you know, the Grail. No one else ever gets in there, so you better enjoy it while you can.
Right. Or Dreyfus entering the mothership.
Yeah, that's right.
Close Encounters, you know.
And, you know, the other, like, you know, a couple other things, you've got some great stuff, so I'll yield the floor to you very soon because you were talking to me about this. But, like, again, watching it, I mean, hey, I love Samwise Gamgee, you know. Sean Astin, I'm a fan, you know. I thought you were great in Lord of the Rings, but, I mean, he's just kind of like irritating in this movie, you know. He's like a mosquito, just again walking around with his Notre Dame jacket. Which, I mean, who likes that? Anybody like that constantly wearing it? You know, it's like we get it. You're on the team,
right?
So it's and then just this whole kind of doe-eyed fawning over everything. And I mean, it's really kind of like a one-note performance until he gets pissed that he doesn't make the team the very end, you know. But it's right. and then after that, it just becomes very, like, wallowing in self-pity and stuff until he gets Charles S. Dutton to give him a boost, you know, to actually get him to complete a season. So it's just that one of those kinds of – it's just a – I mean, either the performance or the character or the way it's written, I don't know. It's just like you feel pity for him, and that's kind of where the emotion comes from, you know. It's like he's such kind of a socially awkward weenie. You know, that you do feel bad for him. So when he does get his time in the sun, you're cool with that. Versus something like Hoosiers, you know, where these kids, and they're not even professional actors, but these kids are kind of given these personalities. You know, some can be pitiful, I suppose, like the little guy who shoots a free throw underhand. Yeah, he's kind of pitiful. But, I mean, these are guys that, that you can kind of relate to, and they're likable, and they've got some quirks. Rudy is just kind of a one note. I love Notre Dame. I want to play. Boo-hoo when I can't. So,
right. And it's totally, you know, his expectations are totally unrealistic, which is, I guess, part of the point of the movie. But why do you walk around like a jerk, you know, moping? It's like me going to Notre Dame and expecting to play. Except, you know, I've got about 3 or 4 inches on Rudiger. So I guess maybe I'm slightly more qualified in terms of size, but, you know, still nowhere near being large enough to play at that level.
And he seems like,
you know, being offended by the fact that, you know, you're not going to make the team when you're tiny guy.
In the words of Ted Knight, you know, the world needs ditch diggers too, you know?
Exactly.
But it's like he takes every opportunity to tell strangers that he's on the team, you know? I know, it's just one of those, like, yeah, we get it. I mean, if he was like, you know, a high school student with autism who's a team manager maybe or something, yeah, you know, that's cool. But this guy is just like, ah, enough already.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man, it's irritating.
Yeah, and then you know, like a couple other things. You know, John Favreau is his best friend. Really, another kind of irritating guy. I don't know, for some reason, never struck me. You know, never did anything for me. And then I'll leave this into you. But then obviously, you want to talk about manipulative. And this is actually one of the things I liked. But when you told me the truth behind the scene, I kind of was crestfallen. But towards the end, he had all his teammates. Kind of step up and say, I want Rudy to play in my place. I want Rudy to play in my place, which is kind of a stretch. And it turns out, what?
Yeah, totally fabricated. Which is the thing that, yeah, I mean, if the movie is actually true, then it really would be inspiring.
That is like
wow, you know, that's pretty cool because of the way that the starters on the team behave, which, you know, in this final scene, and this is spoilerific.
Yeah.
You haven't seen the movie. The coach, Dan Devine, who's a real coach in the 74 or 75 season when this is taking place, he's pretty much a douche throughout the movie.
Right.
And the interesting thing is the movie makers went to him and said, look, you know, here's the deal. In a movie, you have to have drama. And in order to have drama, you've got to have a heavy in it and stuff. And, you know, we're going to make your character the heavy. And he was fine with that. And then he saw this final scene, and he was like, wow, you know, they really went way overboard in making me a jerk. You know?
That's right, yeah.
And then he was kind of pissed because the whole scene is, you know, he's pretty much a jerk to Rudy, and then all the starters on the team, like you say, walk into his office and throw their jerseys on his desk and say, you know, I one at a time, and say, I want Rudy to play in my place.
Yeah, they're sticking it to the man.
Right, and then he bends and says, okay, you know, we'll do it. And in real life, it was Rudy's last game. They were up. You know, they were going to win the game. So he put him in for a couple of plays. That's it. You know, nothing super dramatic, nothing, you know. And Rudy did get a sack on the quarterback in one of those two plays, which is pretty cool.
Right.
You know, if you're on the practice squad and, you know, you get to play your two downs because you're not at that talent level, and hey, you know, you get through and you sack the quarterback. That's awesome.
Though again, it's meaningless though too.
Right, but it's meaningless, and the real Rudy has, based on the mythology of this movie, created a successful motivational speaking career for himself because the movie makes it way more dramatic than it actually was. I mean, you know, it's kind of a cool, neat little story, but a story that you can build an entire career out of? That seems crazy to me.
Yeah, yeah. And then the nice little piece of trivia that you alluded to me, there was someone else who happened to be on that team when Rudy was on, right?
Yeah, yeah. A backup quarterback, never mentioned in the movie, a guy named Joe Montana.
You may have heard of him.
Yeah, you may have heard of him. Joe Montana, again, he's one of the guys who confirms that the movie's total crap. That the jersey scene never happened because he never went into the office and offered up his jersey. And, you know, we were talking about this on Facebook that I don't know how you can make a movie about the 75 Notre Dame team and not even mention that Montana, you know, not even have like a second of him on screen.
I mean, wouldn't that be a nice little, right. even show his name fans, somewhere on the
right,
roster?
So the football fans can go, oh, wow, it's Joe Montana. That's awesome. Because at the time, he was not, you know, he was second string. He was a younger player. And I think it was the following season that he really kind of began to take off and become the main quarterback. But, yeah, don't even mention him. Because he's not important.
He's not. He's not important to the story you're trying to tell, right?
And he had a really interesting career at Notre Dame. But let's not tell that story. Let's tell the story about the guy who played two downs.
You know, that kind of goes to something. So, yes, we acknowledge that. That's great. He had heart. He had worked hard. He practiced. You know, and the old white man Kamal appreciates that. You know,
absolutely.
Appreciates that working hard. Nothing's handed to you. That's great. You know, we appreciate that. And, you know, that's fantastic. It's very rare, though, that you do see movies like this guy works hard and he's talented. You know, he happens to be tall and talented. And, you know, here's the story of this athlete who was just a decent guy who was talented and he worked real hard. There's always got to be that little like, oh. He had heart. He worked hard, but he was also a midget, and you know,
right.
He was sticking to the man at the end, you know. And you got to say that the head coach there definitely could have been an honorary member of the old white man cabal, the way
definitely. I mean, he's a complete jerk, and you know, the real guy is not a jerk. And how do you justify taking somebody who's just you know a decent guy, good college football coach? And who happened to, you know, bring up Joe Montana too, and coach him in key years of his career, and turn him into you know a mustache twirling villain.
That's right.
What is the justification for that? I mean, that's borderline evil.
It's not like it hasn't been done before. I guess you know. I mean,
no.
People. I don't know. Mark Zuckerberg. Social network. You know, I heard he wasn't too happy with how things kind of turned out. But, you know, probably it was worse because this guy kind of knowingly gave his nod to it and he was expecting, you know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you can kind of make me the bad guy. I'll go for that. And then they, you know, go way overboard with it.
Yeah. It's amazing he wasn't, like, sitting in a chair stroking a white cat while he was
making
decisions.
I mean, you know it's bad if you give the okay. And then you're still shocked at the level of your own evil when you see it on screen.
Though,
like, what? I didn't know they were going to go this far.
Though it has to be said, in the pantheon of evil football coaches that are so overdone to be like parodies, none can take the title away from John Voight in Varsity Blues. one of my great guilty pleasures is Varsity Blues, and that is mainly because of John Voight, Bud Kilmer or something. It sounds like a sergeant in, you know, like Hitler's third in command or something. You know, and he was so evil. He was like messing up college transcripts and shooting up kids with drugs and stuff. So at the very least, the guy from Notre Dame could take some solace that he wasn't portrayed like that.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, the late career of John Voight is nothing but bizarre and entertaining.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, Varsity Blues, Anaconda is. I think my cranium exploded at his performance in that movie. I just couldn't wrap my mind around it.
That's right.
It's the one with The Rock, The Rundown. Wasn't he the bad guy?
Oh, see, that one? Yeah, he was in that, yeah.
Okay. He was slightly over the top.
Well, because we don't do any show prep for real, and this counts as our show prep, we will get to it. We'll do a John Voight show one of these days, you know.
Yeah,
we'll do some kind of a John Voight. Just because me talking about Varsity Blues and his character in there really makes it, really crystallizes the fact that he needs some attention on this podcast. But but that's kind of the silver lining to all this. So it could have been a lot worse, Mr. Coach. So don't worry about it.
yeah. There is at least one football coach who is more evil.
So I think when it boils down to this, it really is like. The whole idea of this being a video brochure for Notre Dame is the one that really just, as I've watched it several times, it's like, this is just too over the top, you know? And I think that is what mars the film as a whole for me more than anything.
Yeah. It's for me, it's that and the fact that it makes a gigantic deal. I mean, it changes facts in order to make a huge deal over something that's not really that big a deal.
Right.
I mean, it's cool. It's a cool story, but is it a story that warrants like a 2-hour movie and stuff? Probably not. Until you change everything in order to lead up to this magnificent moment.
But you do get some memorable soundtrack that you can, like any high school could pin on their intros for their, you know, for their basketball players or something. Just play the Rudy soundtrack.
Yeah.
Either that or like the 300 soundtrack, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if you're a man out there who weeps at the Rudy music, then we beg of you, please.
Yes.
Pull yourself together. You know, listen to the influence of the old white man cabal because they will toughen you up.
That's right. Or they will dispatch an operative to your house immediately.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, especially on today of all days, Super Sunday, be a man, for goodness sakes. Be a man.
That's right. don't be too much of a man because you don't want to get in trouble with the authorities, right?
No. I mean, you know, be a real man.
Yes.
A real man. Yeah. You know, not a Neanderthal. We know that, you know, there are elements out there who would say, manhood, who equate manhood with kind of cavemanhood.
Yes, right.
We're talking about real, real manhood.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
Honor, decency, you know, that sort of thing. That sort of old school chivalry that's supposed to be dead, but we here at Objection keep it alive.
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. Yeah.
We're nothing if not chivalrous.
We are.
Contrarian a-holes.
Yes. We are, actually. And we've got the old white man cabal certificates to prove it because we took an online course in chivalry.
Yes. Yeah. Advanced chivalry.
All right. Well, that's not bad. That's pretty good. I mean, that is a sacred cow for many people, but I just don't think – I think it's more reputation than anything. I don't think it belongs in the top tier of the equivalent of the male chick flick. So the movies that get the men's waterworks going. So I'm sorry, Rudy, but why don't you go back to the bench, I guess.
Yeah, not working for me either. So, and I guess that's it.
That is it. Yeah,
edition of Objection.
The Ambivalent Bowl 2011.
The Evil Bowl.
Boy, it could have been any other team in the NFC, and you've been okay with it, huh?
Yeah, pretty much so. You know. Almost any. Yeah, I wouldn't like to see the Vikings go.
Oh, okay. That's true.
You know.
Boy, yeah.
Even that would be better.
But you guys kind of hate it. Yeah, the Vikings, Packers, Bears. You're not fond of each other, are you?
Yeah. Those, you know, you get up north where the snow is. It's like Viking, you know, it's like Saxons versus Vikings.
Yes. Versus, you know. Yeah, very primal up there, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Beowulf.
Oh, man. All right. Well, although I don't recall many scenes where Vikings were wearing giant blocks of cheese on their heads. So,
no, I mean, that's I won't even get into the embarrassment that is that. But I guess that's it. Anything else to say?
Man, I guess get your chips and wings and settle in. And thanks. 10 points easy.